Hello and welcome to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we look at technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. In this episode, we talk with Siva Namasivayam, the CEO of Cohere Health, a healthcare technology company based in Boston. This company uses artificial intelligence to improve the process of prior authorization, a process that can be problematic for doctors, health systems, and hospitals. He talks about ways to make the process smarter and faster, and he talks about prior authorization in terms of health equity. Thanks for joining us today. We are talking with Siva Namasivayam, the CEO of Cohere Health, a healthcare technology company based in Boston, Massachusetts. And the company is focused on a very interesting area of prior authorization and doing it a little bit smarter. And I know that's a very hot topic for many of the leaders in our audience. So Siva, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us today.
Okay, wonderful. And great to meet you, Ron.
Excellent. Well, why don't we start by just introducing yourself a little bit to our audience. Just talk a little bit about your background and about your company.
Wonderful. And again, I am Siva Namasivayam, CEO and co-founder of Cohere Health. I have been in the healthcare industry for more than, I would say, 25 years with a passion to solve some of the pressing issues in healthcare using technology, data, almost always with help from clinical folks, right? And I have kind of started two companies in the space and had some good, very good exits selling it to some other folks. And right now we are actually embarking on how we can take the thorny issue of prior authorization and how we can actually try to be the player that goes among, I would say, the patients, providers, and health plans to really like try to find a compromise and try to solve it using all the greatest tools right now available in terms of data and technology.
Well, prior authorization is certainly an extraordinarily hot topic for the healthcare industry. What made you see that as an area to make a difference in? I was just wondering, what was the tipping point that said this is an area where you can make some improvements that can help improve healthcare for everybody?
It's kind of, if you kind of start to think about it, you know, there are a couple of them. One is that the provider abrasion, meaning the providers are, you know, there is enormous burden, as you can see, on providers on documentation and getting things there. And there are a couple of interesting studies that I saw that nowadays, you know, when you look, you know, if you're a physician, almost like one day per week is spent on documenting and making sure that the, you know, all the documentation, it's not just prior authorization, but it's also all kinds of documentation is done correctly. And that is invaluable. And when you really look at the number of physicians that are graduating combined with the amount of care that is required as US is getting older, there is like a big shortage. And then you just see that more and more of a physician's time is being taken away by so much documentation requirements. So the tipping point is how can you actually use technology to kind of reduce that burden on physicians, but also drive better care for patients, right? So I think that's kind of the tipping point. The COVID was actually a great like lesson for everyone where you could see the how much burdened our healthcare system is and how much our healthcare providers you know, are burnt out. And how can we just take some time off them, right? You know, and so that they can really focus on patient care.
Yeah, the American Medical Association has done a number of surveys illustrating the burden on staff and how it contributes to burnout, as you mentioned. But it also, doctors and other health organizations like the AMA have talked about the burden on patients as well, that, you know, prior authorization demands are hurting patient care. They're slowing up treatments. And in some cases, patients are simply just giving up treatments because they don't think they're going to get approved. So they just give up and throw in the towel. So how How are you making a difference in that area? I understand you're focusing on intelligent prior authorization. So how do you help address that issue?
Right. So if you really look at the crux of the issue, there are guidelines, you know, as you probably know, evidence-based guidelines and practices that physicians should follow. And health plans, they are kind of the fiduciary responsibility they have to the government, to employers, and even to premium holders, that when they approve, or when they make sure that healthcare is provided, it is done according to certain standards of quality and guidelines. However, that particular thing, though, requires I would call the proof points, or usually means that there is more paperwork, which means that the providers have to submit more paperwork to kind of go with the guidelines. So today, most of the time, the physicians have to submit a lot of documentation. Say, for example, even if they want an MRI, or if they want a surgery, or if they want certain types of care, they have to submit a lot of documentation, which they might have, and which in some cases they might not have captured at the right time to the health plan. That entire process is highly manual, a lot of faxes, a lot of back and forth, a lot of burden on the providers on the health plans, because by the time somebody sends a fax that get processed by the health plan, they might find out that out of the 5 pieces of information, 1 critical imaging is not included, which is the case. So then they will send it back to the provider to say that, hey, you need to submit that. The provider then has to go and look at the files and say that if that particular imaging was even done in the prior thing, and they might find out that it was not done, which means that, they might send it back to the health plan to say that, no, we didn't do that, etc. Then the health plan might sometimes say that based on the guideline, I might approve it based on the patient care, or sometimes they might say that you need to get that particular image, otherwise I'm not going to approve. So the whole process can take 10 days, etc. That's one. So what we are doing is we are actually introducing 2 pieces to this. One is when the health plan is communicating the requirement to the provider, it's very, very clear. There are thousands and thousands of procedures in the health ecosystem, as you can see. So they give very clear things on what exactly do you need for this type of service or approval, right? So that is communicated so that the providers can submit the exact information that is required without delay. So that is one. The second thing is that what we are trying to do is that instead of trying to get the physicians to submit it, we are trying to link, we are just telling them, give me the medical record. That has got all the information, because they have to do it for all kinds of purposes. We will use machine learning and natural language to really extract the appropriate information, match it to the requirements, and we will immediately tell you whether it is approved or do you need additional information. Through that, what we are doing is, right when the patient is in the office or when they are just about to go, if they can submit, okay, this is a service that's required, we are able to, in real time, match this and tell them, even before they get to the front office, if it's approved. And what you find out is that about 80% of the time, things are approved. And we are trying to say how in the 80 to 85% of the time, we can immediately approve without any delay, so that the rest of the 15%, we are clear that this is a documentation that is missing. And if we can submit it, we can actually either approve, or we might have to give an alternate care, right? So I think we also do one more thing, which is like, we don't try to deny. We actually use based on clinical guidelines that, if this is not possible. However, here are the two or three options for the provider to be able to get to the same outcome. So we give that, and then we keep the denials to the minimum. So 80 to 85% of them, immediately we approve. About, I would say, 14% or 14.5 times, like in a percent of the time, we actually give them alternate recommendations, and only like 0.5% of the time, if absolutely it is not required, we try to deny, right? That's one of the big things that we have done. And all of this is done within 2 days, if you will. And 95 to 97% of the decisions are done within 24 hours. And as you can see, 85% are instantaneous, right? So that reduces the care delay, very transparent, and to the provider, and it reduces the burden so they don't have to enter all this information and things like that. So that's what Intelligent Prior Auth is, and we are one of the leaders today because we started it around 2021, slowly and steadily, and now we do close to 5 million transactions for a lot of health plans, and about, as you can see, we have reduced the burden on about 4.5 million or 4.4 million of those. And even for the 500,000, we are able to get that answer within a day or a day and a half, right? That's exactly what we do.
Well, health plans often get criticism for prior authorization, but in their defense, they also point out that prior authorization serves an important purpose in terms of controlling costs, reducing unnecessary spending, and also reducing unnecessary procedures that really may not be essential for patient care. So even a lot of doctors who don't always love the prior authorization process will admit that there's a place for prior authorization, just the process needs to improve.
Right. And then the other aspect is patient safety. So here is an example I can tell you, which is like patients sometimes when they come into their, they go and visit a specialist or something, they don't know all the information. They have visited, they might be taking 5 drugs, and some of them I have take so much drugs, right? They might remember only like 4 or 3 of the drugs that they take, and they might not have all the information because they went to some other doctor, etc. What happens if they give wrong information to the physician because they are documenting it, and then they might give them some other medication that could be interacting with it, right? So patient safety is important. So health plans do have a little bit more history of the patient, so they can bring that into the prior auth to say that, you know what, we found that these are the things that the patient is using. And so here is the problem, right? That's one. Second thing is that there is some historical data about a patient. For example, they might have run into certain complications with the previous surgery that might be completely make sure that another surgery cannot be performed, or they need to be a lot more careful. So that is another example where if you have a history and if you can match it with the the physician is also learning something that the patient is not able to give. And also when we really go back into equity, right, let's talk about health equity, is that there are a lot of people in rural areas. They are stressed so much, right? They take more Medicaid patients and, poor communities. They don't always have the access to the best care or the best knowledge, right? Because you need to be keeping up with that. So, during prior auth, it's also possible that we can give them better recommendations on better things to the physician, saying that, hey, you are trying this, but by the way, here is the latest one that's available that might actually give you better care. I will give you one example. When people complain about chest pain, usually the first thing that a primary care doctor does is they will try to take an echo. And what you will find out is that echo is the cheapest equipment available, but the cost per echo is about, I would say, $400, $500, right, to the health plan and everyone else. And the echo is only like, when you really go back and look at studies, it's only 49 to 50% accurate. It's not entirely true. However, there is a latest and greatest thing called CTI, which is like CAT scan stuff that's available. That's about 99% accurate, and that costs the same amount. But the issue is that that equipment might not be available in that particular community, but it might be available in an adjoining community. So we try to tell them that, you know what, we will approve a CTI. Yes, the patient might have to go another 5 miles to get that. But you know what? That's going to be 99% accurate. So don't do the echo, because the echo is only 50% accurate. This particular patient needs that. So we are able to give better accurate stuff also. It's all possible with the technology, right? So it serves a lot of good purposes. But I do completely agree that because of the documentation, because of the manual processing, because of unnecessary administrative things, the process has been lengthened completely. And that squarely falls in and seems to affect health equity. That's because of the documentation, not having this latest and greatest equipments and things like that. Usually people in those communities, they are either not able to get a prior auth done because they are not able to properly document, because they probably need a nurse to help them with it. The nurse might be focused on patient care. They might be seeing a patient every 10 or 15 minutes and things like that. They don't have enough. So they might do about 50 visits and they might be able to get a prior auth done for only 3 or 4 because there could be a delay, etc. So this does affect really people in the communities. The burden affects the providers, the paperwork, and they also don't have the latest and greatest EMRs and their medical equipment and everything else to be able to do that. And so with automation and being able to connect this, we hope to address the problem through latest and greatest prior authorization process.
Let's talk a little bit more about prior authorization through the lens of health equity, because some of the examples you already mentioned are really compelling. But on a broader scale, what does the industry need to do to make sure that prior authorization, while aimed at controlling cost and reducing unnecessary spending procedures, isn't exacerbating disparities among disadvantaged communities?
One of the big things is that today, all the data about a patient is not available. What I mean by that, the historical information, there is socio-demographic information, etc. So if, for example, you can combine data about a patient and about a community and about where they have and what is their what is their economic profile looks like, the history looks like, etc., then the health plan, for example, does have a lot of this information available to them. So if they can actually match it with what the provider is looking for, and if they can actually say that, hey, historically, for example, these type of patients in these communities have more problems, so let's approve that. And then they also don't have access to the best care. So can we actually approve a different procedure that might be indeed be available, etc., instead of following a formula, which is like, because the guidelines typically saying that, hey, if the patient does not have A, B, and C, deny it. If the patient, it doesn't necessarily take into account what is available in the patient's neighborhood, what is the patient's circumstance, what is the history of the patient, and all of that into account when they make a decision always, right? So if the data is available, then you can actually make a much better decision about the patient and actually make, based on the access and based on what is available, they can actually kind of come up with render a decision that might be more palatable for for the patient.
In terms of addressing disparities in other ways, how much is also on the provider and really making sure that they're making a strong case for maybe a patient from a disadvantaged community or has had some challenges, whether it's housing insecurity, food insecurity, things of that nature? Is it also on the providers and the health systems to go that extra mile to really push that for those treatments or procedures to
absolutely. But I think that it shouldn't be, in practice, it shouldn't be the case, but unfortunately, because everything is not where it should be, right, in terms of data information around a patient, it is definitely on the provider right now to even communicate that in the documents, say to say that, hey, this patient has this, this, and this problems. So that's the reason, right? You know, lack of information means, you know, in the medical records and things like that, means the patient, the provider's office or the provider has to take that extra effort to communicate all of that right now. And if they do that, then it's going to make life really simple, right? We are not in a perfect world yet, but hopefully I think CMS and others, Medicaid, are all coming up with electronic ways of making this faster, you know, standards. But it's, we are about 2 to 3 years away. Once that is there, hopefully all this information is readily available that the provider does not have to do anything extra. And the algorithms will figure out by themselves that, okay, this patient is potentially has some disparity and has some major issues with respect to health equity. So let's kind of try to address that. We have health plans really ask us to do, and we have actually done some studies, and we do take, for example, in general today, the way that we try to address is that without a lack of information, we take geography as the marker. Right? If you kind of really look at it, zip plus four, that the zip plus the last four digits in the new zip code, right, that they have around a particular locality, it actually defines who you are if you kind of really look at the correlation. So we really look at zip plus four data, and we do know that this particular community has problems, and we try to take that into consideration when we do our decisions. That is how sophisticated things are starting to become. But the more, the better information that we have about a patient, it's going to really make life easier.
I know it, since you're very much immersed in the field, it's probably something you're used to, but at the same time, it's still a little astounding that so much of prioritization, or at least a significant number of prioritization transactions, are still done via fax at a time.
Fax is the most most used one, right? I would say that today, even if they initiate a request, which is like still 75%, they initiate a request through either fax or phone, but it can be done electronically, but they still do that by fax or phone. What happens is that the attachments, the medical record attachment, it's 100% fax. That's because in the EMR, there is a button called click to fax. So people use that and it just faxes it. And you, I think they should remove that button, and they should actually connect things so that, you know, send or something like that, where it's electronically connects and passes the information. That will save everyone a lot of time and money, actually.
What would you like to see from Washington? Because there's CMS is looking at some reforms to prior authorization process, particularly in Medicare Advantage plans, which are increasingly popular. What would you like to see Washington do to improve the prior authorization process?
I think that I hear a lot of good suggestions coming from DC right now, but it's all the timing, but also there is a lot of delay in terms of announcing anything, which seems to be more common sense. For example, they just should be, there are standards available today in terms of transmitting this information electronically. Why can't they pass that fast? They have been talking about it for 2 or 3 years. Things are available right now. So much money is spent on healthcare technology, and there are so many private companies, health plans are all spending money on making this process faster. So it's just a will to pass that. That's one. Second thing is that, so make that standard really fast. Second thing is that make sure that there is more transparency around this. What I mean by that is that for this particular procedure, here are the 7 things that you need. Document it and clearly communicate it. And the third thing is make sure that these guidelines that are done are more standardized, and you follow what the medical societies are saying, not what some third-party company is saying, but more like a societies, professional societies kind of say that, hey, here are the standards of care, and we just, you know, what this is what we should be doing. and make sure that that transparency is there. I think those are the main things that Washington can do. I see that in lot of bills and things like that, but nothing seems to go past the goal line right now.
Yeah, there was some legislation that had gotten a lot of support, bipartisan support in Washington, which is increasingly rare these days. Yes. But it just didn't get through the legislative session last year. Now some of those components are part of the CMS proposals. But yes, as many in the industry are, we're waiting to see what actually is finalized and enacted.
Yeah, that's right. And they should know that, hey, technology has improved so much. We all talk about, they know about, one of the things that we know that DCs doesn't understand technology yet very well. And we know that from the social media, things that have gotten out of hand. I think that there is so much possible now with technology that, but understand that we need to protect the information, protect the information about a patient, make sure that it's not sold or it's not kind of out there in the ether. All of that, they need to make sure that they need to know. But technology can do so many things right now. It has kind of gotten, hey, if you can just send a look at how financial stuff have taken, right? You don't have to go to your bank nowadays. You can pretty much do 90% or 95% of your transactions just sitting in your home at 9 o'clock in the night or 10 o'clock in the night. So it's possible. Only imagination, it's all possible. If we need, we do need some good imagination.
Any final thoughts you'd like to leave healthcare leaders, hospital system leaders, in terms of improving the prior authorization process and serving patients and their staff better?
Yeah, I think it's good for both the health plans and the providers to communicate the positive aspects of prior authorization, which is that, as I said, patient safety also, but it also gives more recommendations around what can be done. By the way, that's not what is being done today, because many health plans are just saying yes or no. But I think they need to go beyond it to come up with what is the best treatment for the patient, where can they get it, how they can get it, and being able to communicate that, and here are the alternatives available. And I think that the provider should be pushing their health plans also to do this, so that everyone is actually trying to work to the benefit of the patient, right? I think that's not possible today, right? I think that should be the goal. How can we get the patient to better care really fast? When one side has got a lot of information, the other side has got a lot of information, how can we put that together to come up with the best outcome?
Well, that's some good perspective. And it's been time has flown very quickly. So thank you very much for taking the time. I really enjoyed the conversation. Appreciate your insights.
Oh, thanks, Ron. Really appreciate it. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Databook, a podcast by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe to Databook wherever you get your podcasts. For latest news, insights, and analysis of the healthcare industry, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.